In last week's LegCo sitting, the extradition bill, the safeguarding amendment bill and the City of Douglas bill completed their passage through council. The public records amendment bill was read for a first time and the elections keys and local authorities amendment bill almost made it through its clauses stage. MLC newbie Kirsty Morfitt moved the extradition bill.
It's fair to say for your first bill, you're in at the deep end.
Yes, definitely. Extradition is not a simple subject, and obviously we have to ensure it aligns with international obligations and legislation. And obviously the UK are still reviewing their legislation and haven't finalised what they want to do either. So yes, it's a very complex subject.
And whereas it's a relatively simple piece of legislation in terms of what it does, you know, it amends various things to bring up to date our legislation. It does involve you as the mover having to understand how all the previous bits of legislation worked, how neighbouring jurisdictions' bits of legislation work, and how the changes that you're making to existing legislation are going to make things different to what went on before. And that's quite a complicated amount of stuff to get your head around in an area that you probably didn't know that much about.
No, I knew nothing about it before. I suppose I am lucky that because we've gone away from the UK, this is an entirely new piece of legislation in its entirety. So that enabled me to understand the core elements of it first, what was required. A lot of research with other small island jurisdictions, Jersey and Guernsey particularly. Jersey have been through a couple of extraditions, so learning from their experiences. But I've been very, very lucky to have the backing of the Cabinet Office, and particularly Anne Shimon, the officer there, has been brilliant at explaining things at a level that I am able to understand so that I can then go forward with my scrutiny, because that's one of the weird places you find yourself in. You have to give each and every bill equal consideration, and even if it's not an area of your expertise, you have to learn as much as possible so that you are doing your due diligence.
I mean, the one thing that LegCo has that perhaps you wouldn't have if you were in the Keys is you do have the opportunity to invite officers to speak. But as mover of the bill, ultimately you are responsible for believing that the bill does what you're saying to your colleagues it does. So you do have to put a lot of work in. I mean, how many times would you say you've had to read the bill to get your head around it?
At least six times in its entirety. My process now, I'm starting to get a process with legislation, and I tend to read through chunks, common themes of the legislation, so that I can then research those themes, because if you take each piece of legislation in its entirety and then move to do the research, I find I forget things and miss things. So yeah, I tend to take processes or chunks or themes and research those and then move on. So yeah, as I said, they've been very patient with me. For about 6 weeks, they were getting one lengthy email a week going, right, I'm on this bit now, please. Why is this it this way and why is it that way? And on some occasions, there have been things that have been found that you can have input to or have discussion about and debate whether that's the correct way of doing it or the best way.
One of the comments that, in fact, I think it was the only comment that you had, was from Gary Cluett. I mean, this was the final stage of the bill, so you've obviously been through other stages prior to this. It's gone through its final stage. Gary Cluett made the point that whilst there may not have been so much debate in the chamber, there had been an awful lot of discussion going on outside of the actual formal LegCo sitting. How does that help?
So as I said, you cannot be an expert in every area of legislation that you come across. And part of the benefit of having the Legislative Council is that we can come together and pool our expertise and pool our different point of view. And by working in a collaborative way, you definitely get the best outcomes. So it was great to have meetings way before it even got to Keys, and some amendments were made before it got to Keys, and some amendments were tabled in Keys that were a result of previous conversations. So it streamlines the process. It saves the time when you're in the court environment if you can do the legwork beforehand. And like I said, it's a testament to that collaborative nature that it went through the way it did.
And it's not, because I imagine people would be quite alarmed and saying, this is hiding what should be a public debate, so we don't get to find out what the members think. But effectively, what you're talking about here is quite technical, detailed stuff. It's not policy principle. Policy principle tends to be discussed actually in the more formal branch sitting.
Yes, so LegCo, the Legislative Council, the policy principle isn't our job. The policy principle is for the House of Keys, the consultation process, and the other stakeholders that will have fed into that. Legislative Council's role is to scrutinise, review, and ensure that the legislation fits that purpose, that policy. So a lot of our debate is around that and is around research and that side of things. We always have the opportunity to speak, as I did today, on the safeguarding bill, on the importance of information sharing. And so we can have things put on the record if we want to ensure that the community can see that, but also that it's there for posterity, for the future, if we need to go back to it. But the extradition bill is very technical, and it has to align with our international obligations. So though it isn't about necessarily the policy direction, it is about ensuring those technicalities.
And you mentioned there that you made some comments in relation to the safeguarding bill. What were your, I was going to say concerns, but it was more like an exasperation.
Yes, so for decades, right back to the Victoria Climbier case, which was in the 90s, late 90s, when safeguarding issues have arisen, the failures have, there has always been a failure of information sharing. And that's been found consistently through all the serious case reviews. So to reach 2025 and still be having the same failures, it's hard to believe that these are still consistent failures. And it's also, whilst all of the legislation very clearly states if there's a risk to others, then you can breach the confidentiality. They have found that they have had to put that in legislation to ensure that there is absolutely no confusion about the duty to share information.
And of course, the risk, if you are one of the people on the ground and you are thinking, actually, this really does need to be shared, is that you could end up getting prosecuted for incorrectly sharing legislation. So this new safeguarding bill overcomes that.
Yeah, it does offer a certain amount of protection, but I harken back to something that I said at the clauses stage, which is, as a practicing social worker, you would much rather stand up in court and defend your sharing of information when something hasn't gone horribly wrong than defend not sharing that information when something has gone horribly wrong. And I think most practitioners would agree with that logic.
That was Kirsty Morfitt, MLC. Diane Kelsey had two bills to move. The first was the Safeguarding Bill.
So final stage on the Safeguarding Act, which is Amendment Act, and this is just to make some provisions to make it much clearer, especially for people working in the safeguarding sphere, of what their duties are as regards to sharing information, but also making sure that they feel legally supported in that process.
And this was a discrete part of the whole safeguarding legislation, because we heard from Kirsty Morfitt that there are other potential concerns with that.
Yes, I mean, obviously safeguarding, it's relatively new legislation here on the Isle of Man. And so, in fact, we're already talking about whether we should do some post-legislative scrutiny on it. This bill that I have moved and we've gone to final today is very much about protecting vulnerable people if a professional knows something that they should share it if it's a safeguarding case. So it's also a couple of other minor administrative things to do with the safeguarding board, but it's very much about talking about best practice so we can do the job as well as we can and support practitioners in the field.
And I suppose with the benefit of hindsight, it does seem a bit silly listing in primary legislation who should and shouldn't be on a particular board.
On this one, it's more about the independence of the chair of the safeguarding board. It's really important that they are able to hold anyone to account. If you start to water down or make it vague whether they're independent or not, there is a possibility of interference in some way in the future. There was no indication that that was happening, but the chair of the safeguarding board said let's make sure it's clear it's an independent chair, so it's not at the behest of ministers or a senior officer somewhere. They are independent and they work very closely with the network of safeguarding boards across the UK, in fact across the world, if they're doing similar things. So it's about best practice and them being able to hold people to account, a little bit like a commissioner being held, and I don't mean local commissioner, I mean somebody who in law has got a role to do, and that's why we've gone for the independent chair, made it very clear, as opposed to just leaving it as chair.
And then we move on to what should be a relatively uncontroversial piece of legislation, but you've managed to upset the captains of the parish. What's going on there?
I'd like to think I, because they're some of my favourite people, the captain of the parish from my previous life. Now, I think there is very much about saying, if the captains of the parish who've had this role for many years, they can call hustings at any time, requisition meetings at any time on any matter. We need to allow them to be able to do that. And I think there was a concern based on some changes that had happened in the past that they were going to be stopped from doing this. What we're trying to do now with the current bill is to make sure that if a captain of the parish wants to hold one or 10 meetings, they're absolutely able to and don't have the interference of the Cabinet Office or anyone from Douglas telling them how to run their meetings. But also that there's a responsibility for us to have a standard of meeting in every constituency, which will obviously cover either in some cases several parishes, or in the case of Douglas, several in one city. So it's really important to ensure that the electorate get the chance to see their candidates, and in whatever manner, and in fact the Lord Bishop raised a really good point. You have community meetings, and they can actually, it's closer to the people then. So I still wholeheartedly believe the captain of the parish should be able to have their requisition meetings on any matter, including for elections.
And in essence, what the bill now allows for is that the returning officer, who in this case is, I'll use the old term, the chief secretary, I forget what the new term
chief
is.
Chief Executive Officer, Isle of Man Government.
Okay. In essence, they have to ensure or have the ability to ensure that requisition meetings are held in a reasonable fashion, and everyone who stands in an election has the opportunity to speak. That's the kind of, on the one hand, that's the concern being expressed, which is, I think, a legitimate concern. But then on the other hand, we're talking about the person who runs the government and is instructed by the people who he's overseeing getting elected. There's it feels as though perhaps that's an unfortunate part of all this.
And I think what the bill is trying to do is set, say that there will be a standard set, but it doesn't actually stop any other things happening out in the parishes or the towns and city. So I'd like to think in when this hits the ground, we actually get even better understanding of what hustings are for elections, but also doesn't stifle local discussion, which may or may not include every single person standing in a constituency, or in some cases, some people cannot attend a meeting and then never get the chance to go to a political husting prior to an election. And that would be unfortunate. So I think there'll be certain standards set, but still allow for local meetings to happen and be called at any point by the wonderful captains of the parish. And I think it's a great institution that we really should be supporting. I don't think we realise how great an institution and how lucky we are that we have that those offices, and I say offices, but those excellent members of our communities that do so much. And it's, apart from on Tynwald Day, they're sometimes seen as a group of people we don't normally see actually behind the scenes, but actually in their local parishes are doing some wonderful stuff. I would like to say this bill does not stop them from doing that, and it actually frees them to organise how they wish.
And also part of this bill was implementing some recommendations made by the election observers from the CPA that came over. And of course we'd heard on agenda a few weeks ago from Rob Collister, who had been an election observer down in the Falkland Islands. So this role, it's quite an important role, and they've made recommendations again to the Cabinet Office, and changes have been made.
Yes, and I think we also heard today Mr. Cluett, my honourable colleague, who has recently been to a St. Helena election in election observer role. We will have people come and observe our next election. It's about that sharing best practice and understanding where things just aren't quite right. We also had our electoral commission that picked up on some of the post-election stuff from 2021. So this has all been informed by people locally, people internationally, but also by our own commission that was set up and reported, I'm going to say 18 months ago, but some excellent work that's been done and will be done again, and we will never rest. We need to make sure that democracy is our democratic processes are as robust and modern as we can make them within an Isle of Man context.
That was MLC Diane Kelsey calming the nerves of the captains of the parish. Next, Tanya August Phillips.
You took the Public Records Bill through, was it through clauses?
No, actually it was principles. The bill itself sort of looks at improving the preservation of and access to records preserved by the Public Record Office. So that includes proceedings of the Council of Ministers and sort of harmonises the island's public records legislation with the Freedom of Information Act and with the Data Protection Act. It falls back on the motion of Tynwald that was passed on the 19th of July 2023 and implements the Registrar General's subsequent report to Tynwald Access to Public Records and Council of Ministers proceedings, which was approved by Tynwald in November 23.
And how does this change things? So, you know, for someone who's interested, I don't know, in looking up the minutes of the Andrus Parish Commissioners from 1910, how does this impact on them?
So essentially it modernises the public records legislation to improve the preservation and access, but essentially it changes the date at which records are transferred to the Public Record Office is reduced from current 25 years to 20 years, that's after the records were created. So the effect would be that non-sensitive records would be made available to the public 5 years earlier than the current provisions. The bill amends the Public Records Act 1999 by reducing the standard closure period for public records. So that's the period before they become available for public inspection at the Public Record Office, from the current 30 years to 25 years after records were created as well.
So, I mean, it is an underutilized resource, the Public
yes.
Records Office, isn't
certainly
it?
Is,
I mean,
yeah.
there's so much that you can learn and find out from there. And basically, this is making it more likely that you can get to more, current information than perhaps would have been the case before this piece of legislation.
But it increases the level of transparency, which I think was Daphne Kane, MHK's sort of intention behind the motion. It increases that transparency, it lowers the amount of time taken. I mean, a lot of this, you know, it is sensitive information, but it needs to be, we need to be very, very cognizant of the fact that people should have access to this as soon as possible. That's precisely what we're intending on doing, albeit not by all that much. We're making another step forward in relation to transparency and opening up these records for public access.
And on the subject of transparency, you invited me to a meeting. Well, tell me, what was the meeting?
So the meeting is the Business and Functioning of Legislative Council. Obviously, you know, we have our government work. I've got two departments, for example. We've got our parliamentary work, committee works, and branch work, and Timwald work. So Legislative Council, a lot of us are on government departments. A lot of us understand where all of our legislation is up to in various different government departments. We are essentially trying to manage our workload as and when it's coming up, arranging for sort of evidence sessions would be arranged from Business and Functioning of Legislative Council. We've recently put out a report on post-legislative scrutiny of the charities regulation and registration legislation. That came from Legislative Council. It's something that Westminster Foundation for Democracy, for example, is very, very interested in, because we're doing post-legislative scrutiny, which is an evaluation of our legislative work after 3 to 5 years post-implementation.
That's the sort of thing that, to a certain extent, I suppose people would think you would do anyway. But, I mean, I'm very much aware. I mean, there's loads of bills that I got through when I was a minister, and I don't think anyone's looked at them since.
Yeah, I think that's very much the case. I mean, we don't have an unlimited resource. Saying that, you know, there is a lot of sort of policy scrutiny as and when things come up in various different departments. So I have to be fair when I say that, you know, policy officers, where they can, if they pick up on problems, issues, they will look at the wider framework, including legislation and whether or not there's any legislative changes that are needed off the back of these problems. But this is very much a proactive approach. To, you know, looking at some of the pieces of legislation that we know are causing problems that the public are concerned about, like charities, say, for example. There was an awful lot of interest in that. And kind of looking at these things and saying, are they 3 to 5 years post-implementation? Does it work? And that's actually a really, really important question. Is it doing what it was intended for it? We go back to principles. This is what we intended to do. Has it actually improved lives in the way that we expected it to do so? And we then sort of evaluate off the back of that and make recommendations, like we did in the last Timwald sitting, and with the Attorney General, who's responsible for charities registration and regulation. And then he provided a report in response to that and accepted all of our recommendations. We had a slight amendment, I think, from the Speaker, and that was quite welcome in Timwald Court, so we passed that, and the Attorney General is now cracking on with some of those the things that we've asked him to go away and do. So now we're looking at our next piece of post-legislative scrutiny down on the list, the priority list that LegCo members themselves put forward, and that we're very, very willing to accept suggestions as well from members of Keys and also from members of the public on.
And what your committee can do is assist in making a smooth passage for business.
Yes.
Going through Legislative Council. What you can't do, though, is legislate for every single version of Council of Ministers has ever been. Waiting till the very last minute to get a whole load of really important bits of legislation through.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's an awful lot of legislation that's coming through, and it is a final year before the election, a parliamentary year before the election. So we're trying to manage our workload accordingly as best we possibly can by sort of collaborating together and ensuring that whatever passes through the branch is getting that proper quality assurance. And that proper quality check. But no, we can't control any of that situation. That's very much for the Council of Ministers to decide on what they do and don't move.
That was MLC Tanya August Phillips. Finally, Rob Mercer brought our legislation up to date with the recent change of Douglas to a city.
It's really a tidy-up operation. Obviously, for over a century, Douglas has been known by another name, you know, the Borough of Douglas, the Douglas Town of Douglas. And of course, in 2022, it was granted city status. So really, this is just a tidy-up operation, looking through the various statutes that are referred to and bringing them up to date to reflect that new city status.
Because there are lots of bits of legislation, particularly relating to local government, that have references to Douglas in them. So, yes, there's quite a trawl to go through and find all those bits of legislation and then amend them or possibly even rescind them because they're no longer relevant.
That's right. I mean, also some of the offices, for example, some of our legislation still had references to aldermen. Of course, it's an office that no longer exists. So as part of that tidy up operation, those obsolete references have been revoked or removed.
That was MLC Rob Mercer. So what do you think? Good to see legislation finally moving through the branches after a very light legislative programme for the first 4 years of the Cannon administration. Have the captains of the parish been persuaded to call off the militia? Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. For now, I'm Phil Gawne. Gunnar Myerson, Geist.com. Thanks for listening.